We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jose Altuve has a broken hand. We've got a big injury in the Arizona dealing with a catcher. And we have a couple other big news items. Plus, Tout Wars results and a preview of the NFBC coming up on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by the good friends at Underdog and Fantrax. I'm Jeff Erickson. He's the man in front of the doorknob, Fred Zinke. How's it going, Fred?
I'm good. There's so much to talk about today here in the middle of draft season and with all this spring training news that now has a huge impact on opening day.
Yeah, and we're seeing lots of stuff, too. There'll be some big items that we're going to be talking about, right, you know, that we'll talk about off the top, but like, read the player news right now, because there's all sorts of job battles being decided, all sorts of little notes that we, you know, under the fire hose, we start to miss a little bit there. There's a reason why, like, news and notes columns are so popular this time of year, why someone like, you know, Mining the News with Jeff Zimmerman is so good. You know, stuff like that is really important because there's so much to go through. We'll go with the big ticket item, though, first. On Saturday, Jose Altuve suffered a broken hand after getting hit by a Daniel Bard pitch in the WBC. He's already had surgery. He's going to be out. They haven't determined the amount of time he's out because it's still, you know, he's still waiting for the swelling to go down. But typically, we see this lasting, you know, 8 to 10 weeks in some cases.
Yeah, I saw some people say 6 to 8. I've seen 8 to 10. I kind of went 8, but I should probably, I don't know, maybe 8 was a little too generous. I don't know. I've been trying to do some Altuve projections and then also building in, because we know he's going to be out for a while, building in some replacement level player time. I went with 2/3 a season of Altuve and 1/3 a season of a replacement level player. Let's say a Joey Wendell type player in your middle infield spot. Okay. So, and then trying to figure out where he lands from there. Maybe I'm starting to wonder if maybe I was a little optimistic, like maybe I shouldn't give Altuve his full Altuve-ness when he first comes back. Right. Like, I don't know. Cause he's one of the more consistent producers in fantasy baseball over the last few years.
He is, but you know, there's a year where the stolen bases went away. Yeah. You know, I don't think they will here, but maybe it affects how he slides.
It's totally possible. You're right. And actually the stolen bases went away for more than a year. Like in 2019, he stole 6. The shortened season, he stole 2. The next season, he stole 5. And then last year, it pumped back up to 18. So, yeah. So I agree. If there's a, you know, I mean, you can be conservative with the steals projection. You could also be conservative with the power projection a little bit since he's coming back from a hand injury. So that's where I feel like maybe right now I'm a little high and I need to downgrade him a little bit. Like obviously leaving the 2 months of Joey Wendell, but maybe I pull like another homer or two or steal or two off the 4 months of Altuve, pull away a few runs and a few RBIs, pull down the batting average, just a few points or something. So anyways, that's kind of where I'm at right now and trying to see where he fits in comparison to NFBC ADP. So I'm just taking a quick look here in the main event so far. His ADP is 107. That's with him going 30th in one of the drafts, which obviously would heavily pull that number up.
And multiple drafts on Saturday in the main event.
Right, true.
So if you just do starting on Sunday, he's 199. Okay. And that's a range of 176 to 233. So that's pretty representative of where he's going to go. Where are you on that range?
I'm in. I think I'm in.
Okay.
I think I'm in at that range. Like when I start to look at the hitters that are available then, like 170s, that felt pretty right for me. So like pick 180 is the end of round 12. So if I could get 12 players and then draft Altuve, or 11 players and then draft Altuve, I think that feels pretty fair. I wonder if there's like in the main event, because people are swinging for the fences, if now his upside is capped a bit, if people like, I wonder in a mono league, if maybe he'd go a little higher. I'm not really sure. So say, for example, Thyro Estrada in overall in the main is a 169. Mm-hmm. Altuve or Estrada?
I mean, I'm kind of down on Estrada, so that's probably a tough comparison, but because the answer is neither for that price for me.
Jake Cronenworth?
I'd probably go Cronenworth. I'd expect to be at the lower end of the Altuve range.
Okay.
I mean, his average pick is 199. So looking at a little closer to that, Whit Merrifield at 193. Yep.
I got Cronenworth at 196. This is all mains. Cronenworth 196, okay. Merrifield 200, Ketel Marte 201.
Yeah. So those are the guys around him. And if you go at his max, which is 233, you add in Jorge Polanco, who already has his own negative injury news as well, and Josh Rojas, who has some playing. Those are the second basemen that he's around. I thought I'd actually be a little bit more pessimistic on Altuve but those players that we're mentioning around there, the only one that I'm like clearly ahead on is Cronenworth, and I think probably Ketel Marte.
Yeah, I in that gap in the early 200s, I also see Gene Segura in all mains. He's 218. Jeff McNeil's 222. I think I'll take Altuve over most of them. I agree with you that Cronenworth is a debate. I'm not usually the Marte guy. He tends to miss a fair amount of time himself.
Sure, that's fair.
But yeah, anyways, I think Altuve where he's going in the mains, I think that's pretty fair. And I do understand though, in a big contest like that, like the odds of Altuve beating his timeline back by any significant amount is, I think, really unlikely.
Right.
Right. Like the odds of him getting back in 5 weeks or something, I think is really unlikely.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah. Like this just doesn't seem like, it's not like a pulled hamstring where they're saying it's 6 to 8 weeks, but then, and it probably will be 6 to 8 weeks, but at least there's a chance that maybe, in 3 weeks, he's feeling better than they thought. He's progressing quickly. Like, you know, as Scott Pianowski says, injury optimism is not your friend.
Right.
I think I should downgrade him a bit. And I think at that point, he'll come in right around Cronenworth. And maybe around Marte too. So I think the main event drafters have pivoted. Of course they did, but I think they've pivoted really intelligently on the fly.
Yeah. So the other question I have to ask is, what does that do to the second base pool? There weren't that many of them at the top to begin with, right? Semien, Jazz, Ozzy Albies. Does it push up someone like Tommy Edman or Andrés Giménez to push them up closer to that next tier?
Yeah. So the second base pool is interesting because I do feel like it has a pretty large floor. So it's not a bad position to just wait on. And then you can just draft, like we just named a bunch of players that are all kind of serviceable, whether it was Jeff McNeil or Gene Segura or something like that. Like you can go even further down, Luis Arias, Bryson Stott. These are later round picks, Colton Wong. I feel like there's a lot, like I don't feel that much pressure to get a good second baseman. If I get one, that's great. I think there's a lot of options late, and I love shortstop this year, so you only need one second baseman.
Right.
Miguel Vargas is going to have second base, in no time. So I think the only thing that hurts the second base pool, I think, is maybe the cumulative loss of Altuve, maybe Polanco for some amount of time, and Vaughn Grissom.
Sure, I can see that.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little Vaughn Grissom, because that's the other big news item is – he just got sent down. He was expected to win the shortstop job, or at least some people expect him to win the shortstop job. He is definitely getting drafted as such, but he got sent down, and so did Brendan Shoemake, who was another highly touted prospect. It was thought to be one or the other. Instead, it's Orlando Arcia as the starter. Is this a temporary thing, or is this just for right now? Is it a contract thing? What's your take on this situation?
Yeah, so I actually have the misfortune of having drafted Grissom in one league late last week, which I'm obviously regretting right now. I forget what round I took him in. I say round like 13 or something like that. And I had been against him all year, all draft season. I was like, oh, he's just too risky, too risky. And then I finally bought in right at the wrong time. I saw some people say, like, you have to drop him now. It's an NFBC league. I don't think I'm going to drop him. I think I'm going to hold him for a bit. Like, offensively, he's a really excellent player. Like,
he was
last
having a
year,
good spring offensively, too.
right? And so I think there's no question about the bat. Like, last year in the minors, 96 games, 14 homers, 27 steals. He hit 324. Like, his career minor league batting average is 315. He's a really good offensive player. Maybe the Braves just give him 3 or 4 weeks in the minors just to play shortstop a fair amount. And then obviously, Arcia is probably going to play poorly. Like, he'll field fine, but he'll probably hit poorly. And then Grissom's backup. I just feel like if we stash prospects, like if I'm drafting today, I'm not drafting Grissom very high, and maybe I'm not going to draft him at all. I don't know. I think, but I at least consider it. Like we do stash prospects who might be up a month into the season. And
Right.
if you're going to stash one, why not him? It doesn't have to be someone like Matt Mervis who hasn't played in the majors yet. Like, it can be Grissom, who's already shown a little bit, at least, that he can hit in the majors.
Right. I think if you already draft him, like in your case, you hold on to him.
I think so.
I don't draft him now, though. I
Right.
don't draft a stash. I try
Not
not
even
to.
last round, eh?
Maybe, but injuries happen all the time. Setbacks happen all the
Yep.
time. I there are certain players I'll draft a stash, but I'd rather not. I did, you know, I thought I was so smart drafting Fernando Tatis later than everybody else in the main, and I got zero at bats out of him. You know, sometimes that's with prospects too. Sometimes you get stud prospects and they rake right away, and that's worth it. But I think there's plenty of other counter examples of when it's not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible for sure. And it's possible, I guess, that Grissom doesn't get the next promotion, even if they need someone. But
Yeah,
I
could
just
be
think
Shoemaker for that
it could
matter.
be. It could be. There's just a lot because Grissom's healthy. You know, Arcia could get hurt. Ozzie Albies could get hurt. That happened last year. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the Braves could have maybe even an injury somewhere else, and Grissom goes into the outfield and get his bat in the lineup. There's just a few ways that he could get back up. And maybe he fields well at shortstop for a couple of weeks, and they just go with him.
Yeah, Star
So,
Platinum says that Steve Phillips said they're trying to humble him, that he's got a big
ego.
ego. Well, it's possible. How does that, you know, if that's the case, it could be longer than we thought, you know?
Yeah, the only thing I'll say about that, I mean, I'm sure Steve Phillips said that, and maybe that's possible. Maybe he did at spring training this year. They did kind of. It's weird. They kind of proclaimed that Grissom was going to be there. Not that he was going to be their shortstop, but they really, I felt like the Braves going into spring training really were high on Grissom. Like, they didn't really pump the brakes on this until just the past week. Like, up until then, the Braves, like, going into spring training, it was Grissom's the leading candidate to be the shortstop. So maybe if they felt like he had developed an ego, then they're doing this now. But I got to think throughout the offseason, if they felt like he had an ego, they would have pumped the brakes on this sooner. And
Yeah,
all
I
offseason, it would have
agree.
been like, No. He will try him, but it's probably going to be Arcia. I did feel like the Braves. It's weird. All this is a weird one for me. Like, I felt, and I don't think Grissom was that big of a disaster at shortstop in spring training. Like, maybe he wasn't great, but I don't know. It could just be an example of them saying we just want him a few weeks in the minors in real games,
Yep.
and then he's up. I maybe this is me being hopeful because I've already drafted him in one league.
Yeah. I think that's
Yeah,
fair. I'm trying to
yeah.
see real quick if I have them anywhere there. I don't think I do. No, I don't. I wasn't necessarily against him, although I will say Mark Bowman had a report way back in January or February. He's with MLB.com saying that it was a possibility that Grissom could begin the year in the minors with Arcia there. And they also have Adrianza, who they don't want to, like, they would have to cut Adrianza. He doesn't have any options left. You sometimes see stuff like that lasts a couple of weeks, and it's some BS. And then, oh wait, we can't lose Adrianza. Oh wait, we've got a guy that's hitting 220 starting at shortstop for us.
Yeah,
Let's
this
call
is
Grissom.
the same Adrianza who's over 30 and has a career 663 OPS.
Can't lose that guy.
No.
Can't. No.
So Mark Bowman was one of the people who actually made me come around because he was hesitant on Grissom before spring training. Then
Yes.
he just wrote an article 2 or 3 weeks ago saying, "Fine, guys, I'm on board. Grissom's good. I'm on board." And then I was like, okay, if he's won over Mark, who I've been reading, and you have too, for forever. Like, I said, okay, if he's one over Mark, I'm in. Like, really cool power speed combo in the middle rounds, but yeah. Anyways, it didn't work out. Or at least,
and I do think defense is a legitimate issue too.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's super hyper important defensive position, more so with the shift restrictions.
Yep, for sure. So, I didn't think he was that big of a disaster at spring training defensively. They knew going into spring training that he wouldn't be a great defensive. I think I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where this all goes from here.
Yeah. All right, BZA, RZA, GZA must have been reading our show sheet because he asked the next question that we're going to be talking about, and that is, what's our Soto concern level with the mild oblique strain? Picking 6 in his home league, and him and Yordan, both with questions, were his targets. Good question. What is your level of concern, Fred Zinke?
Minimal, but enough to move him to the back of a group. So I would say, so first of all, without knowing the home league, if it was a roto league, I wouldn't have been interested in Soto 6th before the injury. If it's a points league, that would be different because of all the walks. And he did mention Yordan in there too. So I'm wondering if maybe it is a points league. If it's a roto league, I wouldn't have been interested in either of the two of them at 6 anyways. So I feel like Soto, I was kind of assessing this because I have another draft tomorrow night where I'm picking 11th, where Soto would be kind of roughly in play, if not for the injury. He might be there, he might not be. If he was there, I might want him. I feel like he's in a group with, you know, Vlad, Mookie Betts, maybe you put Freddie Freeman in that group, depending on how I like Freddie Freeman, so I put him in that group. Some people wouldn't. Maybe you put Manny in that group if you really like him. I feel like he's kind of in that group of players who don't go in the top 6. That seems to be the top 5, and then often Kyle Tucker. And maybe Ohtani gets in there around 6-7, but then he's like in the next group where he could go like kind of anywhere between about 7-12 or 7-13. Mm-hmm. I think maybe this injury is enough for me to put him at the back of that group and make him more of a turn pick in a 15-team league. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. So I'm drafting 9-22 on Saturday in the NFBC main event. So I won't take him at 9. I know that. It puts someone like Vlad more in play. The only thing is, an oblique strain can be considered mild and day-to-day, and then it can take a month after that. We've seen that happen copious times. We've also seen it be a day-to-day thing. So, and then like 3 days later, he's fine. So at least it happened early in the week this week. So by Friday, Saturday, I'll have a better feel.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was about to say. If he hasn't played by Saturday, then you're probably not taking him even at 22.
Correct.
Especially the way hitters are falling in the main event. So
as they always do.
Yeah. Right. So looking at that overall main event ADP from the 9 drafts so far, like at 22 is Pete Alonso, Mike Trout's after that, Devers is after that, Goldschmidt's after that. I'll just take one of those guys over Soto, unless Soto's back. And if Soto played Thursday and Friday or something like that, then he's not going to be there at 22.
Yep.
So I'd say you're probably, just where you are, you're probably out on him anyways.
Probably so.
It's more the people probably picking like 11th through 15th who would have to, if he's back, have to decide if they take him in the first round. If he doesn't come back by the weekend, it'll be more the people maybe picking early in the draft who would take him, they take him more around the 2-3 turn.
11 to 15 gets to make that decision twice. So,
I think if you're 11 to 15, if you're not comfortable taking him in the first round, you don't take him in the second round.
Jason Wanick says, keep talking about those main event plans. He's drafting in my league, but he's drafting second. So, hopefully we won't be sniping each other too much, but
I won't make you, we're going to talk a little main event later, but I won't make you give away too much.
Yeah. I'll give you the entire plans.
Yeah.
All right. One other news item hit right before we started the podcast here is, Carson Kelly suffered a major injury, and he's going to be out for an indefinite period of time. Fractured forearm is the injury. Obviously, Gabriel Moreno is the player that is going to benefit more in playing time, but he was already going to probably play a little bit more than Kelly anyhow. So it's funny. I tweeted out that I just did another video with Alan Soslowski talking about possible league winners, and I touted Moreno because he was going to pick 230 last weekend in main events. That ADP is going to go out the window, regardless of how much you think he's going to increase his playing time. It's definitely going up. His cost of the Gabriel Moreno business has just gotten more expensive.
That's absolutely. In fact, if you were, maybe if you, I don't know, it's hard to say. I was going to say, if you were a fan of Moreno, maybe this isn't good news because you're going to have to pay up for him more.
For sure.
And I don't know what the ceiling is with him. So, okay, so back to just the original. I did feel like him and Kelly would be a fairly 50-50 split before the injury. And then Moreno maybe over time, which maybe even in the first couple months, would start to wrestle a little more playing time away. Now I think Moreno could come out with 70% playing time right from the beginning, maybe even more than that. This guy, like I watched this guy in Toronto, like he's an athlete as a catcher. Like he's a good athletic catcher. Like he could play a lot. He could handle that. So obviously like when I adjust, I'm going to adjust my projections tonight for him. He's going to move up just purely on volume. I'm going to increase the at-bats. He's a batting average helper, not a herder. So that's going to make him more valuable alone. I'm going to give him a few more runs and RBIs. The big thing with Moreno is like, what's the power going to be? Like last year, he's played 62 games in the minors and only hit 3 home runs. And then he only hit 1 in his trial with the Blue Jays. His career high in the minors is 12 in 2019. Even if he played 70% of their games this year, I don't know if he's ready to hit more than like 10 home runs, 12 home runs. I think that's about, which is still okay. So I just don't know how much, if he's ready to go any more than that. Long-term, I still really like him. I'm just not sure this year. How about him versus Keibert Ruiz?
I'm more on Moreno than Ruiz probably to begin with.
Okay.
I think I would be ahead of him. I'm going to take, this is one where I want to take a look at the ADPs. I know Ruiz just got paid, which is good for him, but.
Yeah. So I picked Ruiz because so far in the mains, Moreno's 230, Ruiz is 199.
Right.
So there's like a 2-round difference. And there's some similarities there. Like Ruiz probably should benefit. He's a player. One of the players who profiles is probably being able to benefit at least somewhat from the shift ban this year.
Right.
Or shift limitations, as I prefer to call it, because you can still move around, just not as much as you did last year. You can still shift around a bit. But anyways, so his batting average should be okay. He's always profiled Ruiz did through the minors as a high average guy. He does steal a few bases, not a lot, but a few. And Moreno will do that too. And neither one of them have much power. So
right.
So far. So I kind of, yeah. So that was kind of my thinking, is that there's some comparables there. I would have taken Ruiz previously over Moreno just based on, I think Ruiz is going to have a heavy workload and Moreno wasn't. But now I think maybe I would take Moreno over him. And like I said, like the skill sets are pretty comparable. If I climb any higher than that on the catcher ADP list, it's Cal Raleigh, who's just like a totally different kind of player. Like, I don't know if you're really debating the two of those. Like, you're either looking for power or you're not.
Right.
When you're drafting Cal Raleigh. And then it goes way up after that, all the way to Tyler Stevenson, and we're inside of pick 150.
Right. I don't think it goes. I don't think Moreno deserves to go that high. I would take Raleigh over him. I think it's only going to jump like three catcher spots, basically.
Yeah. He jumps two or three rounds.
Yeah. He doesn't reach Raleigh or Stevenson, but I think he passes Ruiz and Danny Jansen. Yeah. I think that's about it for me. I gave him a 5% increase in playing time.
Okay. And there's a bit of a shiny new toy thing with Moreno where, right? Like he's played in the majors, but not a lot. He's still got that prospect status from last season.
For sure.
Ruiz was all of those things a couple of years ago. We just are coming off kind of a lame season for him.
It also kind of depends on how I built my roster already at that point in time too. It might be that I had already taken an early catcher, in which case I'm probably not going to take a second early catcher.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not ruling it out. I could pull a labor Zinke and get 2 out of my first 5 picks at catcher. But I did two out of four
in a recent NFL. Like,
let's give it credit there. Yeah, proper credit deserves, because you did him at the 4 or 5 turn. That's right.
Right. 2 out of 4. Like I've done the Real Muto Sal Perez thing in 2 leagues already this year. We'll see how it works out. I don't mind the pure value draft rankings and projections wise. We'll see what the risk factors like and how it plays out.
Would you do that in a main?
Yeah, for sure. I would be okay with that, because we know that if a catcher, like if you're talking a main in the sense of like trying to go for upside, I would be fine with doing that, because we know if a catcher goes off, like he finishes really high in the final, like if Sal Perez could hit 34 home runs this year, forget the 48, like if he could hit 34, which is in his wheelhouse easily,
yep.
he could end up being like a top 20 overall hitter. So yeah, I would do that. I don't think of catchers as like not having a ceiling. Like I think they're, I think that these guys, Real Muto could hit 300 with 25 home runs and all of a sudden he's a top 15 fantasy hitter. So I think, yeah. I think there's a ceiling there. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Before I move on and talk Talent Wars, let's take care of a little bit of business. First of all, our ads, as always, are on the Blue Wire Network. I should say our podcast on the Blue Wire Network. Here's a couple of their ads.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you for your indulgence there, and thanks to the Blue Wire Network. Always happy to be on there. Secondly, let's share a little love for Underdog. The fantasy baseball season is underway, and there's no better place to play than Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy baseball. Right now, Underdog has MLB best ball tournaments live, including the Dinger, which has $500,000 in total prizes. In best ball, all you do is join a contest, draft your team, and that's it. There are no answers, there are no waivers, no trades, and no in-season management. Draft 20 rounds of players, get the best cumulative scores in your starting lineup. Three pitchers, three infielders, three outfielders, and one flex each week of the regular season. Getting started is simple. Go to underdogfantasy.com, sign up with promo code RWMLB, and not only will Underdog double your initial deposit up to $100, but you'll also get 6 months of our RotoWire subscription for free. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy, promo code RWMLB. Draft your $100,000 Dinger team today and get started on that. It's a great deal. All right. We did Tout Wars this past weekend. I did the AL version of that. Let's go ahead and start covering a little bit of that because I thought it was a fun draft, very interesting draft. I'm going to go ahead and put up the results on the screen. People can see it themselves. So we'll get that going here. But yeah, here we go. And you can kind of see what we did here on this one here. But it's an ale-only auction, first of all, so keep that in mind. And we'll talk a little bit more about my individual results in a second. But I want to start off because last year, Doug Dennis won our league. And he did a very aggressive plan that worked out. Mike Gianella tried it the year before, came up a little short, but Tout Wars does not have an innings minimum requirement, meaning you can punt starting pitching. It's been always been my contention. Yeah, you can go ahead and try to do that. Good luck to you. But you're giving up two categories out of 10, strikeouts and wins. You have to be perfect to win on the other eight categories. Well, guess what? Doug Dennis was perfect, almost perfect. He was 1 point off on whip. But he won ERA, he won saves, he won every single hitting category. And not only that, but he in four of the five hitting categories, he blew away the competition. It wasn't even close. So he won by 9 points, and he was winning most of the season. You know, so is this something that we have, you know, the whole question for everybody is, what do you do about this?
Have an innings limit. I think you should probably have an
innings limit. Well, no, because I think that's garbage. I mean, it's strategy. We have to combat the strategy, not outlaw it. We're not baseball here where we change the rules when we don't like a certain result. We have to actually try to, you know the rules and try to combat it. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, you could go either way. I would want to set up my league so that starting pitchers are important like they are in baseball. But you're right. Like the old Lauren Michaels, tell me the rules, I'll play the game. Right. So, yeah. So, okay. So let's forget that as an option. So Doug went back to the well this year and invested heavily in hitting and somewhat in relief pitching and not at all in starting pitching. And, yep.
I'm scrolling up so people can see the, Doug's pitching roster there.
Yeah.
So he spent $64, which is actually $3 more than last year on pitching because his high skills relievers cost slightly more this year.
Yeah, and he definitely took some high-skilled relievers, taking Anthony Munoz and Paul Sewald and Yoan Duran. Like those being the ones that – I don't know if Scott Barlow counts as a highly-skilled reliever. Like, his ratios are fine. They're not awesome. He can sometimes have a high whip. But what I find noteworthy is I don't know if people didn't totally copy him, but as you noted in your article that's up on RotoWire, about 1,000 extra dollars was spent on – no, that can't be right – on hitting this year.
It was more like 60 extra dollars were spent on.
Oh,
hitting.
Okay.
I'll look at it.
No. You're right. I'm reading the budget numbers. You're right. Only about 60 extra dollars were spent, which is still something in a 12 team.
It's like a point and a half percent higher on hitting. Actually, so that's an adjustment
$5 per person or so, which matters. So a couple managers, Mike Podhorzer, and who was the other one? They did a different plan, but they did get on board with Andy Andres, also got on board with spending very little on pitching, although went different. They actually drafted starting pitchers.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like Andy did all upside. I can show everybody that.
Yeah.
He spent $47 on pitching though. It's pretty wild. Jacob DeGrom for 20, Tyler Glasnow for 11, got the discount on Glasnow. Threw in a Corey Kluber, Tanner Houck may or may not start. Still not that much on starting pitching. Still went, but you know, he has Karinchak, Abreu, Neris, Liam Hendricks, hoping that he comes back at some point in Loaiza. Interesting about to me is he doesn't have a set closer now.
He could get very few saves. It will be hard and he will not probably do well in wins.
And that's the thing. An issue with Andy's team is because I think Andy has a great team otherwise, lots of upside.
Sure.
But the lack of volume and starting pitchers, you better get saves.
Like you can see Doug's plan is really clear in the sense of he knows who he is. So I often punted saves in Tout and I did the opposite of Doug where like I definitely didn't draft anyone who could get saves. I did draft some middle relievers who were good ratios, but I didn't go near saves. Like Doug doesn't toy around with this. There aren't any starters on the list and he makes sure his relievers in his opinion are skilled ones who will have good ratios. So I could see where Doug could get burned on this one this year. Like he should get pretty much all the Mariners saves, but he may not get them all. Like Diego Castillo will probably get a few. The Mariners do mix and match a bit. The questions for Doug that I think that might in the bullpen and that'll decide things. You know, is Barlow for sure the Royals closer? And does he hold that role all year, not get traded? They don't use Aroldis Chapman at all as the closer. And then Duran, like how do the Twins use him? Duran could get anything from a good amount of saves. I don't think he can get 30, but he could get 20. or he could get like five and just be pitching. You maybe gets 100 strikeouts and five saves. Right. So I think, but Doug needs the saves based on his plan for this
year. He does, but I think the elegant part of his plan is it doesn't have to go perfectly. Every single pitcher on his staff is a reliever and could get some saves. Like he drafted Clay Holmes for a buck last year, knowing that he liked the skills.
Yep.
Hey, you got 20 plus saves from him and, you know, a lot of wins. He got a lot of goodies out of that. That was a big, big pick for him. And you know, he's got countless guys like that, you know, whether, you know, he had Munoz and Sewald last year. He had Barlow and Sewald on the draft, and I think he picked up Munoz. So he also has Juan Duran, who may not close games, may close like a third of them or two thirds of them. We don't know, but like Martin, Brash, Bummer, Kelly, Marcionaccio, maybe one of those actually gets some saves too. I mean, Clay Holmes is not exactly set as the Yankees closer this year.
No, I agree. And the combination of, I think Clay Holmes is pretty set, but I know what you mean. I think the combination though, back to Doug, of Bummer and Kelly, like you can see where he's going there. They don't have a closer to start the season.
Right. He as picks up five can... here, five there. That's huge.
Yeah. That's, you can see where he's going with that whole thing. I think if I was in Doug's shoes, I might've skipped. I don't know. Duran's really good. I was going to say, I might've made Brash and Chris Martin or Brass and Marinaccio. I might have got rid of them and made them $1 guys, taking the 15 I spent on Barlow and gone up and got more of a real closer, Kenley Jansen or.
So I'm going to slightly disagree because I don't think Aroldis Chapman is that big of a risk, that big of a threat.
Right. You think he's got two closers between the Mariners and the Royals?
Yeah, I think he does. And an opportunity to pick up other saves here and there. I understand the possibility. I mean, they did sign Chapman. Maybe they'll feel like, okay, we can get some saves out of him and flip him at the deadline.
Yep.
But I don't think he's that pitcher anymore.
No, me either. Good. I don't believe in him. Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that being said, even without him last year, they didn't go like heavy on saves with Barlow. Like
they also have a new manager.
Yep. You're right. That could change things too.
But that sure. it could be for better or for worse, I suppose. Although I think it's harder to be worse than it was with under Matheny. So because Matheny was pretty notorious about not discussing, you know, who his closer was. So before we move, go back to show the hitters here. You mentioned when we were putting together the outline, you thought the closer prices were kind of high. And so I'll just go through some of these and people can get their own judgment here. Ryan Pressly went for 23. Peter Fairbanks, 16. I bought two closers. I bought Kenley Jansen and Felix Bautista for 19 each. Clay Holmes went for 17. Trying to think, see some of the others here. Alex Lang went only for 9, so that's the cheap version. Same with Jose Leclerc for 9. Mike Podhorzer went the discount rate with closers. Look at it, you know, Joe Sheehan never pays for closer, so you know, I don't see an obvious one on his roster. Diego Castillo for a buck could work out. We'll see. Emmanuel Clase went for 23, same price as Pressly. Actually, if you compare it, like. If that's the top of the market, 23 is actually okay. I'm okay with
really
it.
Really good. Yeah.
Jordan Romano went for 22. And we already discussed Andy doesn't have a full-time closer right now. So you thought those prices were relatively expensive.
So actually my take on the closers was not just your auction. It was throughout the auctions. So right.
I figured as much. Actually.
Yeah. So if I just pivot over to the mixed league, we see some pretty pricey, like Ryan Pressly, 18, Romano, 20, Hader, 21, Rizal Iglesias, 18. I guess that's not too bad. And then the National League, I felt like they were definitely priced up, like Iglesias for 23. I love Iglesias. I have him on almost every team, but 23 is a lot. Hader for 24, David Bednar, 19. And I just feel like they're high. Helsley for 23. I'm sure the people who bought all these, each of in these, Camilo Duvall 18, like I felt like all these individuals could be like, well, Camilo Duvall at 18 makes sense if Ryan Helsley is 23. And I get that. I just felt like the prices on the closers were pretty high. And I haven't done a Towers auction in 2 years, but I've done a lot of them. And I have a pretty good frame of reference for what closers went for before. But I think
you did the 15 team auction too, right? You didn't do the 12.
I did. No, I did the 15
head to head. Which is a little different in that league naturally devalues closers to the point where we instituted a rule that everybody had to roster two relief pitchers.
Right.
Didn't have to be closers, but you had to roster two on your active roster at all times. So
yeah,
so a little different. But.
Yeah, I did the 15 for a lot of years, and then I did do the NL for 2 years. And those are the most recent for me as far as auctions go. Yeah, so I think what this is, though, is it's a product of, I mean, we talked during draft season, everybody says this, that there's about 10 relievers, maybe not even, mm-hmm. now that Diaz is out, there's about 10 relievers and they want one of them. Right. I want to save. I want a saves anchor. I want one of those 10. Really, it's about 10, depending on how you feel about Clay Holmes,
right.
or Duvall or Helsley or whatever. But people say, I want one of them. So now that we're down to like such a small amount where everybody wants, not everybody, but most people want one of them.
And one of them's gone already in Diaz too.
Right. So I think that's what's pushing these prices up. I just feel like across the board, they're like $2 or $3 a pitcher more than they were. I think the Class A prices are pretty fair. I think everything else is $2 or $3 more dollars than it was a few years ago. And by a few, I mean like 3 years ago. But I think it's just that. It's just supply and demand and people saying like, I want one of them. And that seems to be whenever I listen to a lot of podcasts, that seems to be everybody's philosophy. I want at least one saves anchor. And then I'll mess around with the Paul Sewalds of the world. Right. So that's what I think is driving the price up.
I think you're right about that. I think that's true. And I think that's kind of what Brunch was suggesting, is like how few teams have the guy close it. It's gotten that way the last 3 or 4 years. It's not just this year. It's been a consistent trend.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just say it's a function of, I mean, this year's pool is a little different. Like the Dodgers don't have a set guy this year.
Yep.
In fact, we didn't talk about that, but a lot of people have speculated the guy that leads the Dodgers and saves this year isn't even on their roster. Maybe so. Daniel Hudson's going to begin the year on the IL, but they seem very hesitant, very reticent in declaring like Evan Phillips to be that guy, despite him being so good of a pitcher.
Yeah, for sure. So Phillips is someone who I was interested in the whole draft season. Thought I would have multiple shares by now. I actually have none, and I'm kind of okay with that. I think he's their best reliever, but I think they know that and they're okay with using him other ways. Sure. I think they could be a committee for a while. Something I was going to say about this is, so it's like you look at it and you're like, oh, like Emmanuel Class A, like on the 2-3 turn, for example, just jump back to drafts, like that's ridiculous. But then,
Last year with the top two closers, though.
And what I was going to say, when I look at in the main event, when I look at Raisel Iglesias on the 3-4 turn, like at that point, Devin Williams in the middle of round 4. I'm sure if I scroll up a bit, I'm going to find Hader in the middle of round 3. Yep, there he is. So you're like, oh, Emmanuel Class A, that's such terrible value. Like on the 2-3 turn, I could be getting Paul Goldschmidt instead. Well, you know what? When it comes back to you on the next turn, the way the closers are going, there's so few of them, you're going to be staring at only a couple left and you're still going to have Kyle Schwarber available. So maybe you just take Class A and Schwarber instead of taking Paul Goldschmidt. And now you're crossing your fingers to a closer.
Right. Then you're looking at Presley and Helsley at the, no, that's not
Batista.
They're
gone.
No, yeah. That's the 3-4 turn. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
You're looking at
Tinley
Jansen, Duvall.
Tinley Jansen. Yep. So maybe you just get Class A and then you just take the hitter that falls to you.
Well, so the thing is, we all know our spots, and we're going to get back to Tout in a second. But for the NFBC, you know where your draft slot is. So mm-hmm. have a closer plan.
Just
lock. You don't have to lock it in, but you have to know, like, okay, if I don't go closer here, what are my alternatives? When do I need to act? You really got to know that. And maybe you push up if you're going the alternative route. You might want to push up those alternatives because other people might be doing the same. And then, unless you feel like you have 6 guys you can choose from in the 8th round, okay, great. Then do that. But if you feel like there's only one guy in the 8th round, you might pitch him up to the 7th.
The 8th round. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's where I can see some people saying, you know what? I'll just get poor value in the 2nd round or the 3rd round and just get the guy I really like.
Yeah, because then it's really hard for a closer to earn that 2nd round price tag, even Class A. It's not like he's, mm-hmm. what we know for certain he's going to get 50 saves. He can get 30. He could mm-hmm. get 50.
Yeah.
We're counting on the ratios and Ks, but even that, I mean, we've seen so countless relievers burn out before, and you're getting fewer innings. So that's why everybody is always so hesitant to pay that price. But at the same time, yeah, it's the security that you're paying for there. And it's always the Mariano argument. If you use like every year with Mariano Rivera, if you use just a dollar value system, you use your projections, he was never worth, quote unquote, worth the price he was costing. But the return on investment was so solid, so locked in, you had to give it a little bit of a boost there.
That's right. And you're just, I feel like that way with Class A, we'll see. I see some Rivera comparisons there with him where he just gets not a ton of strikeouts, but enough and a ton of ground balls and very little home runs, very few walks. Anyways, I can see where you're just like, hey, my second round draft pick or my early third round draft pick in Class A, it's not going to be great value, but it's not going to be terrible value. And it's going to set me up to not have to dig into this closer pool for the next 15 rounds, maybe for the rest of my draft. And then I'll play the waiver wire. So, yeah.
Exactly. All right. Comment from Neil Orr. He was blown away by how bad the Yale catcher prices were. He realized it was Yale only at first, but then he did. And he goes, still yuck. So let's go through some of those catcher prices real quick. Were they expensive?
You spent on some. You spent on some catchers.
I did. I'm feeling that remark. No, it's okay, though. And keep in mind, it's also Telworth is OBP, not batting average. So just keep that in mind, too, when you're looking at these. Cal Raleigh, 15. Shea Langeliers, who's eligible at catcher in this because our Tout War is the league games played requirement is 15, not 20. Langeliers is one of those few guys that benefits from that. Yasmani Grandal, because he walks a ton, is still $12. I got MJ Melendez and Christian Vasquez, 21-9. I kind of bet on the playing time a lot. Melendez qualifying at catcher, but not having to play there necessarily. That appeals to me. Sal Perez went for 21. Melendez also walks a ton too, which I like. Jonah Heim, Eric Haas, 8 apiece. You saw Podhorzer go cheap on his catchers. That is a plan. Joe Sheehan went to Alejandro Kirk for 19. We saw Eric Samulski of Rotoballer. He was cheap on his catchers too. Ryan Jeffers, Bo Naylors. Rob Leibowitz, Danny Jansen for 13. Logan Ohapi for 10. We got some negative news on Ohapi later that day that he might begin the year in the minors. And then Andy went full on big spending at catcher. Dalton Varsho and Adley Rutschman, 27 and 24 apiece. Reaction.
I actually kind of like the top and then the bottom. I think I'm kind of, that's how I kind of was when I was doing the NL is like, I'm actually okay with Dalton Varsho at 27, like in an AL to have a catcher.
Because he runs. Yep.
He runs. Now he's not, now he's not a good OBP guy. I think I might just assume Rutschman at 24 because he's a little more, he walks. He's a little more of an OBP guy. I know that helps Melendez, which I'm sure is part of your strategy, right? Sure. So you see Melendez and you see Sal Perez at the same amount. And in a regular roto league, you'd be like, that's insane. Like, because Perez is going several rounds before Melendez, but the OBP thing swings it back. So that they're.
Although I will say Melendez goes to pick 113 in the mains. It's not that preposterous. He goes slightly more expensive than Alejandro Kirk and Sean Murphy and William Contreras. He's a top 10 catcher.
Yeah.
Even in batting average leagues.
Yeah. He's 41 picks in the main behind Perez.
Yep.
But then in yours, he went even.
Same price. Yeah.
But
for sure.
But it's the batting average. Like Perez isn't a walker. It's the OBP. Perez isn't a walker. Right. So I know the $1 catchers are gross, but like, I don't mind just taking Max Stassi could really hurt your OBP now that he's their number one catcher. Jorge Alfaro, he won't kill your OBP because he won't play enough. But actually Reese McGuire at 2. I don't mind that one either.
Yeah.
That one's
by the way, how long does that Angels think situation flesh out like that? I was really surprised to see that because Ohapi was really good when he got called up last year. Yeah. He was really good in the Angels minor league system after the trade too.
Yeah, I think Ohapi's back up somewhere in the first couple months of the season. It's just tough for Rob having spent 10 on him.
Yeah.
And now he's going to have to get another catcher.
Or not.
Or to basically take a 0. That's right.
Yeah.
Back to Stassi for a minute. He's that catch 22 that makes me not want to draft him where the more he plays – you need him. The more he plays, the more he'll get you counting stats, and the more he'll kill your OBP.
For sure.
And so when Ohapi comes back and Stassi starts playing less, you might breathe a sigh of relief and be like, "Oh, thank God, my OBP is thanking you for bringing Ohapi back." But like, you shouldn't want your catcher. I guess his career's 295. That's bad for a catcher, but it's not like last year it was 267. But 295 in a career is. I don't know. It's not Eric Haas is 287. That's worse. So maybe I'm giving Stassi. Maybe I'm too hard on Stassi.
Maybe. He's had his moments. They've been fleeting, but he has had his moments.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's spend the last part of the podcast talking about NFBC strategy. But first, quick note from our friends at Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your Dynasty Keeper, Redraft, and Best Ball leagues. Coming from another service, Fantrax makes it easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Do you need a customizable commissioner service for your fantasy league? Fantrax offers more customization than any other platform. Waivers, categories, scoring system, schedule. Fantrax offers custom solutions for all that and more, and it's all free. Sign up for free today and be entered to win an official MLB signed jersey from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. All Fantrax users will also be entered in their MLB Game Day Experience giveaway, which includes free tickets and $1,000 for travel and accommodations for you and your league mates. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. That's Fantrax.com/RotoWire. All right, here with Fred Zinke, the man in front of the doorknob. We are talking now a little NFBC to finish this off. As alluded, I got the 9 slot in my NFBC main event right next to former all-time champ Phil Dussault. Who didn't just win an overall. He won everything that year. Set records. Best season ever. I'm next to him. Awesome. I'm going to learn a lot.
So I thought of this after I saw your tweet about that. I thought, okay, Jeff, if I could give you these two. Now, NFBC main event leagues, you're going to have some tough competition.
They're
really
all
hard to find a group of 15 where you're
especially
like,
especially the live drafts. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Those live drafts where it's hard to find a group of 15 where you're like, oh, I never really heard of those guys. Right. So would you rather have Phil in your league picking right beside you or Phil not in your league, but you get your 15th choice on KDS?
It's a great question. Because I did get my first choice in KDS. And so did Phil, yep. By the way.
There you go.
He wanted to be 10. I
great
wanted to be
9.
Alike.
Yeah.
Which makes me worried about what I'm going to get in the second round.
What was your 15th choice? Was it say like pick 15?
No. Okay. It was not. I think the last choice for me was like 6 or 7.
Okay.
6, I think, maybe. Because then you're not getting one of the top guys and there's a drop off in the second round too.
Okay.
I think I'd rather just take my chances against Phil. And I know that's just heresy. First of all, he's a nice guy. I'd have a fun conversation. Secondly, he can run unlucky. He didn't win last year.
Absolutely. Yep.
He is human.
Yeah.
Drago bleeds.
Yeah.
He won a lot, but he didn't win the main last year. So, he can run the gamut of bad luck like anybody else. Right. I think that, and the thing is, I'm not so cocksure that I have the best spot or the 15th worst spot is the 15th worst spot.
Right.
Might be fine. Might just be just fine. Maybe I didn't want 6 and I get Kyle Tucker there and he becomes the best overall player in baseball. Possible.
Yeah. I think I would punt Phil and take pick 6. But or
that's
pick,
kind of like
my least favorite.
But see, the thing is, I could see that. I could see that too. So I see that. The thing is, though, like you say punt Phil, but next guy up is like, you want to be in John Statmiller's league? It's do you want to be in?
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe they put you next to Mike the Mouth and you can't concentrate. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons, to not want certain spots. And sometimes it's the quality of the player. Sometimes it's just, your comfort zone too.
Yeah.
Or both.
Yeah,
Mike's an awesome player too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this because Mike's the only negative about being next to Mike is his mouth, although that's part of it. But it's also, and that's just Pori Hemplo. It's not saying it necessarily put me on tilt like that. But the fact is, it could. It's something. Maybe you're next to some guy that just smokes like a chimney, and that stench is bothers them the whole time. Maybe guy's got a horrible hangover, and you don't want to be next to that guy that reeks of booze. I mean, there's lots of reasons not to want certain spots.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want both of you reeking a booze. Like, that's just too much.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
okay. So, your pick 9, which I think I'll also say, I think maybe I might rather have Phil before me than after me, because now I'm assuming you picked 9 because
he's going to clean up my mistakes. Is that what you're saying?
No, I was going to say there's probably more than one. 9's a bit of a like a pond at that point where there's a bunch of hitters who kind of go around 9 all the time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I think I can go 14 deep, have all gone 9th in one of the 9 main events. And then there's other guys like Tatis and Freeman and Machado who have gone 10th or 11th. So there's a large pool of players who you could consider at 9. So for sure. I don't think Phil can like kill you at pick 9. He can just take one guy and then you get to pick again before Phil picks. So I think if I was going to be, I think I might rather be one pick after him than one pick before him. And cause I wouldn't want him, I'd rather pick before him in the second round. So
I will say, and I'm not going to say the players, but there are 2 players I'm targeting in round 2.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Don't tell me the players.
I will not. I will not say, do it in a boat. I will not do it in a moat. I will not tell you my 2 players in the round 2.
I will say that previewing pick 9. So in 9 drafts so far, the big 5 plus Ohtani have gone before pick 9 every time. So they'll probably be gone. Kyle Tucker's gone before pick 9. I bet every time but 1, his ADP 7. So he's probably gone.
Yeah, he has a max pick of 10. So that happens.
Yeah, so he's probably gone. So you've got, you're going to, so Phil can take one other or someone before you. He's going to take one other of Bichette, Witt, Soto, Burns, Cole, Betts, Guerrero. You can pick.
And you have to account for the fact that he's going to play in multiple mains.
Yeah.
So am I. Right. So
you can have any one of these.
A little differently each time, but it'll be my first main. So I almost certainly going to take a hitter there. I don't envision taking Burns or Cole or Strider there, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah. And then your round 2, there's some really, if I just look at ADP, there's some really good hitters still there, whether it's like Alonzo, Trout, Devers, Goldschmidt, Austin Riley could still be there. Maybe Yordan Alvarez. And then if you want to go pitching, there's like you can go with the big YOLO pick of DeGrom, or you can go with someone safe, more like Aaron Nola. You could do the closer thing. Justin Verlander's really skyrocketed in the mains. Like his ADP is 26. Earlier in draft season, you could get him around pick 45. Like I know.
Yeah, I know. It looks like that dream of getting him at 39. Like I got him in, I got him at 38 in labor. Not happening now.
So in the mains, he and Scherzer have leapfrogged. It's not about pitchers being moved up. He and Scherzer have leapfrogged, Alcantara, McClanahan, Woodruff. Like you were often seeing Verlander and Scherzer earlier in draft season behind those pitchers, or at least definitely behind Sandy and probably Woodruff, and maybe more with McClanahan. So, but now they've kind of, at least so far in mains, they've gone ahead of them. So for some reason, the main event drafters like them more than nothing's really changed. Scherzer's having a nice spring, but whatever. Like we already knew.
None of those guys will probably be available to me at 39, though. That's the interesting
thing. Yes. If you don't take you just said a hitter in round 1. So if you don't take a pitcher in round 2, then in round 3, you hate Kevin Gausman this year, so he won't be.
I'm warming up. Too many smart people.
He's having
like
a nice spring.
That's the thing. The thing is, I didn't like that he was the poster boy for we're going to enforce the balk rule, but it seems like he's adjusted.
Seems fine. Yeah. Agreed.
I think that, when you like him, when Scott likes him, when other smart drafters,
likes him.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of smart people who know a lot about pitching like him. I should probably revisit it. And, he did have like one of the all-time worst BABIPs ever.
On a team where other pitchers had good BABIPs, so it wasn't it was all a disaster. Seems like he was unlucky.
And a team that seems like they've improved their defense too.
Yeah. So I mean, Christian Javier could be there. His ADP is 38, so he could be there. Yeah, Luis Castillo will be there.
I'm going to say I'm not locked into taking a pitcher in the third round though either.
Right. Okay. And then somewhere in there in rounds 4 or 5 or somewhere, like we talked about earlier, you have to have closer plans. So in round 4, there's a bunch of closers around there. Romano, Devin Williams, some pitchers like that, Presley. And then round 5, you're still in the hunt there for Kenley if you wanted to go there, or Duvall or something like that. And there's some starters around round 5.
I will say this. I will not take Duvall in the 5th round.
There you go.
I have some reservations about him. Him, and I also have in the organization. And Gabe Kapler. I don't feel like getting Kapler.
Yeah, so it's pretty early to get Kapler.
69, 99 maybe, but that won't get it done. So maybe I guess I could see 82, but I don't really want to do that.
I know. Round 4 is not bad. You still have the round 4 pick is like what, early around 50, and then at that point, there's still
22. I mean, 52.
Yeah, there's still Romano and Devin Williams and Ryan Presley and Helsley. So I mean, you have a good amount of choice there to pick your favorite.
Yep.
I don't know. But somewhere in there, somewhere in those first five or so picks that we just discussed, you probably need a reliever and you probably need at least one starter.
So. Is with the new rules, are you more or less inclined to get aces early?
I'd say neither. I'd say I'm still about the same. I do feel like this year's, my kind of stance has been that this year's pool of starting pitchers of aces, I feel like is quite deep compared to some other years. And I don't feel like many pitchers stand out. I know that pitching always gets pushed up in the main, but I'm actually a little surprised to see Burns and Cole both in the top 12. I think I'm more of the mindset that I'll, depends on where I pick, obviously, but I think I'd rather let someone else take the first three or four pitchers and then I'll jump in at some point after that. Like, I think even in the main, even with pitchers pushed up, I think I'd rather maybe let someone else take Burns or Cole and I'll get in on the Gausmans or the Christian Javiers or Shane Bieber or something like that. I just feel like there's a pretty deep group of pitchers that I like, and I'd like to get like two or three of them.
The only problem is like everybody likes to take pitchers in that 5 to 7 range.
Yep.
So that's the tricky part, is okay. Yeah. I can wait and get these 8 guys I like. Well, you might just get one of those guys, not two of them, certainly not three of them. And that's the tricky part.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Oh yeah. You're getting probably one of those guys and then you're dropping down a bit and you're getting a Zach Gallen or,
yeah. Alec Manoah. And your late picks too. You know, like, oh, I have these guys from what, you know, from 150 to 200. I like 10 of them. You mm-hmm. might get one of those or two of those. Mm-hmm. And remember, yeah. You're passing up a good bat there. You're a full-time starter. The 15 team format really punishes every decision you make and takes away from you.
I have always said that I think every fantasy draft is all about your pitching decisions because there are always hitters you can take. The hitters get progressively worse as the draft goes on, but they're always, you can always find a hitter to take. So like, I think your draft plan starts with where do I want to target a reliever or two, and where do I want to target my top three or four pitchers? And then you're just like, okay. And in all the other rounds, I'm going to draft hitters. So I think making that plan of whether you're going to be a round 2 starting pitcher, a round 3 starting pitcher, whatever it is for you. I'll say that I've often drafted 3 pitchers, 2 starters and a closer in the top 5 and 5 rounds this year, but not in the first 2 rounds. Like, I'll often get 2 hitters that are really, really good, like Jose Altuve in one league. And then not that I'm upset about that. And then I'll go, you know, starter, closer, or starter, closer, starter, something like that. And get 2 pitchers that I really like, but maybe more in the Luis Castillo, Gausman tier, you know, than Gerrit Cole.
Yep. I could see that for sure. You know, Uncle Ted says fade all pitching and he could roll with these 5 pitchers. They're all great pitchers. Everybody likes them though. I guarantee you would get 2 of those guys, 3 max, and other people are going to snipe those from you too. That's my point. You know, if you can see it, I can see it. If I can see it, someone else can see it.
Yeah, for sure. Like Uncle Ted's list is George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, Dustin May, Drew Rasmussen, Hunter Brown. Like I think I'm not going to go through it right now live, but I'm pretty sure if I picked out ADPs for all those pitchers, I don't think you can get all of them in the main. Like, I don't think they're in 5 separate rounds, but I know what Ted's saying. Like, maybe you could start your draft with 4 or 5 hitters and a closer and then go to that group of 5 starters.
Right.
Or maybe you could get four of the 5 starters. And that could certainly be a plan for someone.
But you have to start 14 hitters too. Don't forget that. So you can start your draft with those hitters.
Yeah,
but you got to keep getting some more of those too. And if you're,
you could go 4 hitters, then maybe a closer, then 4 of those pitchers, and now going into round 10, you have 5 pitchers and only four hitters, but your 4 hitters are your 4 biggest values. So
I think it's an interesting play.
It's a plan. Yeah. I've never, not to shoot holes in that one, but I've never been able. So he said draft hitters and stream pitchers, which you can do in a shallower league. You can't do that in the 15 teams. In the NFBC, there aren't any pitchers on the waiver wire really to stream in the NFBC.
Your opponents are also streaming.
And they're so smart and they're so good at targeting. You're like, oh, I'll grab this one guy. He plays the Reds.
I got him a week ago. What?
He plays the Reds this week. Oh, someone, you're right. Someone sharp got him a week ago. So streaming pitchers in the 15 is just really tough. Starters in the 15 is just really tough. And yeah, that's why I've kind of feel like I want to get two or three starters that I like. I really like Ted Rasmussen. I think I have him on every team. I think he's my SP probably four on every team.
Yep. I do. I like Rasmussen. I really like Jeffrey Springs.
Yeah.
So does everybody
else. I have
him
on a team. Yeah. Rasmussen would be my SP three or four on every team for sure. Yeah. So, but like you said, so do a lot of people. So Rasmussen, now I've been taking him in round 10 or 11 in the main. He's going in like round eight. No, or eight or nine. I think
129.
Nine.
Is it, I have them highlighted right now. 129.
Yeah, round nine.
So. And teammate Jeffrey Springs is 130. So guess what? Mm-hmm. You're getting one of those guys. You're not getting both of those guys. And you might have to push them up too. Rasmussen has a early pick of 104. Springs is 110. So
So just, like I said, if you want one of them, make a plan. You know, I like you're getting them either early in round nine or late in round eight. If you don't pick till late in round nine, or you're crossing your fingers, or add another guy in that you're willing to take if you want to wait till late in round nine. But make a pitching plan and then just fill in your hitters around it.
Yeah. So there you go. And you know, we'll see. I mean, I like some of these names that are being thrown out late too, and we'll get some of those too, because we're going to need. You know, you're not going to need nine pitchers. You're going to need 13 pitchers. You're going to need lots of pitchers over the course of the season. So
I've been trying this year after last year's experience, I've been trying in my 15s to draft a lot of starting pitchers. Yeah. Like I've been trying to draft a good, like about a dozen of them.
You'd rather draft them than try to stream them. I agree with you on that.
I haven't been grabbing a ton of relievers enough, like two for my lineup or three for my lineup. But I haven't been doing a lot of. I did grab like Brad Boxberger in the last round of 15 recently. But in general, I've been grabbing some pitchers, even if it's just like an Adam Wainwright in round 26, just to have starting pitchers. Because once they start falling off, like I don't think Wainwright's gonna be that good this year. Maybe he'll be terrible. I'll have to drop him. But if he's not terrible, he's gonna start all year.
Yeah, and so, Waino and Michaelis were that way last year, and both were profitable.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're going to leave on that note. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think I'll be excited to watch the results from these main event drafts coming in the next weekend, and first FAB coming up for all of us early drafters on Sunday night. I've already been looking a little bit at our labor FAB, just trying to remember some of the names that we were not interested in way back earlier in the season. So we will quickly switch from FAB to, from drafts to FAB. And that's what makes this whole thing so interesting.
Yep, exactly.
When we next talk, we will be about 48 hours from opening day.
Exactly. All right, thanks, everybody. Great comments. Great interaction. Appreciate you on that. Thanks for tuning in. And those of you who are listening later and after the fact, thank you for listening wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks to Underdog and Fantrax for their draft season-long sponsorship. Appreciate you as well. Take care.